Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, let's talk about sex. Teenagers and sex specifically. Because a major medical group is recommending significant changes to what doctors talk about when they're discussing contraceptive options with teen patients. Here with more is Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi there, Carrie.
Hello, Meghna.
So first of all, explain to us exactly what has the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended.
So the American Academy of Pediatrics has issued a sort of an update to its policy on birth control for teens. It has all kinds of wonderful sort of familiar aspects about how teens need to be counseled and they need to be given all the options. But I would cut to the chase and say that what feels really new to me is that what they're saying is that hormonal implants and IUDs are first-line contraceptives for teens, meaning that they are the most effective. They should be like the first thing that you're offering to teens among the options that they have.
Not the pill.
Not the pill. And it's really kind of mind-boggling to me because the pill is what has been the standard for so long. And I'm just thinking, you know, when my 12-year-old daughter goes in for her first birth control appointment, which I hope is in about 20 years or so, she'll probably walk out with an IUD instead of a packet of pills.
So this is quite a change. And at the risk of stating the obvious, we are talking about teenage women here. Birth control for teenage women, not men necessarily.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, condoms remain important for preventing sexually transmitted diseases. So that's a separate issue.
Okay. Now, did the American Academy of Pediatrics say why they wanted to put the emphasis more on these long-term contraceptives rather than the pill for teens?
Right. Well, yes, I'd say the answer is twofold. One is that they are simply the most effective. They don't depend at all on the teen doing the right thing, like remembering to take a pill or remembering to use a condom correctly, but rather they're just sort of set and forget methods. And
So reduced user error.
Reduced user error, which contributes to the fact that research shows that they're over 99% effective. And then the other element is that IUDs have just been incredibly rehabilitated over the last couple, three decades. They've been shown to be safe, relatively safe to use in teens.
Well, rehabilitated, as you were saying, from the 1970s when it was the Dalcon Shield, I believe, which was found to cause pelvic inflammatory disease in many women who were wearing, who had this IUD.
Right. So the Dalcon Shield was this horrible debacle in which a lot of women got pelvic inflammatory disease. And so IUDs became sort of objects of fear and loathing because they had done such a horrible disservice to so many women. Then gradually that was a design flaw that was corrected. There was more research. They were found to be safer.
This new recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics is also coming at a time when we're actually seeing a decrease in the rate of teen pregnancy in the United States. So why? I mean, right. It seems as if of the various forms of contraception, the pill's been doing a pretty good job.
Pretty good, but it's still not very good. We're still seeing 750,000 teen pregnancies a year, and our rate of teen pregnancies is one of the worst in the developed world. So there's a lot of room for improvement.
Okay. So, Carrie, stand by for just a moment, because let's bring Dr. Sarah Pitts into the conversation. She's the program director for the Adolescent Medicine Fellowship at Children's Hospital in Boston. Dr. Pitts, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So if I understand it correctly, Children's Hospital already does this. They recommend that teens use implants or IUDs. But what are some of the hurdles that you might see in rolling this out to other pediatricians, other pediatric practices around the country?
Providers need to have the time to actually get to know all about these different methods and be able to counsel appropriately. There's a lot of myths out there that have to be dispelled. They are somewhat costly upfront to stock them in your practice, and not all practices are going to have providers who've been trained to do them and feel comfortable doing that. So you need to have a place that you can refer to. In Boston, that's a bit easier because there are so many medical facilities and providers, but in other places of the country where it's less populated, that may be more of a concern.
Right.
So I think those are some of the challenges.
I circle back to something that Carrie said earlier, that while things like IUDs may actually be much more effective in the long term because it's sort of set and forget and you don't have to remember to take the pill every day. Carrie also said that it was kind of mind-bending to her that that might be the preferred method of contraception for her daughter because the pill has been so central to
right.
what we think about as birth control for generations now. I mean, so when you have these conversations with young people and their parents, do you sort of get that quizzical look from them? Like, why not the pill? Why isn't the pill good enough?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel comfortable with that, but it's interesting. Teens talk to their friends, and as more and more of their friends are getting an implant or getting an IUD, they say, I want what my friend has. And so it's going to just become more normative. And, you know, we start these conversations out by saying, okay, you want contraception. We're going to talk about the most effective kind, which includes an IUD and an implant. And we tell them about them. And we said, then there are some additional ones if that's not for you. You know, so I don't think pills aren't going to be recommended per se. They just won't be the first line. And for some people, pills will be the way to go.
And Meghna, we should mention that there are a couple of downsides of the IUDs. For example, more than half of teens report moderate to severe pain when they're having it inserted, which is very brief, but still it could be off-putting. And also there can be irregular bleeding over the first few months. So it may be that not every teen will want an IUD, even if their friends are all getting it.
Mm. Absolutely. So.
And the American Academy of Pediatrics noted those possible complications, but said that they're not significant enough for them to change their opinion that IUDs are probably the way to go for young women.
Yeah, I mean, over 99% effective is hard to argue with.
And Carrie, Dr. Pitts talked about the higher upfront cost of things like IUDs versus the pill. How does that play into insurance and access?
There is a much higher upfront cost, often $500 to $1,000 for an IUD or an implant. But this recommendation comes in a very timely manner because we also have Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act kicking in, which mandated that insurance plans cover contraception with no additional cost to the patient. So that means that some of that barrier is likely being removed. And in fact, these long-acting methods become more accessible to everyone.
Mm. And Dr. Pitts, just to circle back to something you said a little earlier, because, I mean, we are very, very lucky in the Boston area, as you mentioned, that people have a lot of options when it comes to going to places where they can get these, to get these devices. So, I mean, what's your advice to parents or teens outside of a place like Boston if it's tougher to actually get an IUD, even if they wanted one?
I think that's a real challenge, and I hope that the nation is going to work on addressing that, because teen pregnancy, it's embarrassing that it's as high as it is in this country. So hopefully it'll become less and less of a hurdle now that these statements are out from the AAP, and people are going to say, no, we need to provide this to our patients. We have to find a way to do it.
Well, Dr. Sarah Pitts is the program director for the Adolescent Medicine Fellowship at Children's Hospital in Boston. Dr. Pitts, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Always great to have you, Carrie.
Thanks, Meghna.
And you can read the Common Health post on this new recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's at commonhealth.wbur.org.
And that's it for today, folks. Happy Monday. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.